It's time for Windows Weekly with Paul Throt and Mary Jo Foley. Microsoft wants you for life, and they're ready to kill the nag screen. Paul is excited for the new Xbox, and Mary Jo talks about Microsoft's bad cloud day. Windows Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Throd and Mary Jo Foley, episode 484, recorded September 21st, 2016. Microsoft for life. Windows Weekly is literally brought to you by Sonic, Twit's 10-gig fiber internet service provider. Join Sonic's internet revolution as they bring fast, affordable internet, phone, and TV to homes and businesses all over California. Visit sonic.com/twit to sign up for services and receive your first month free. And by audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly with Paul Throt and Mary Jo Foley. I'm Father Robert Ballister, in for Leo Laporte, who is currently looking for the answer to life, the universe, and everything across the pond. Of course, Paul Throt is the guru behind Throt.com, the purveyor of news, reviews, and analysis for tech enthusiasts. Mary Jo Foley, the mastermind behind ZDNet's All About Microsoft blog. Together, they're here to bring a light into the deep cave of Microsoft news, like a overcharged LiPo battery exploding in the darkness. Paul, Mary Jo, so good to have you.
It was like you were introducing Bond villains there.
I know. I was like, wow, the master
of disaster, Mary Jo Foley.
Do you have a cat, wow, and can you do this with your fingers?
I think I need that on a business card. If I still used business cards, I would.
You know, that is one of those strange things at these conventions that we go to, these shows. Yeah. We all do the business card thing, and I've even gotten down the whole Asian thing of handing like this and a little bit of a bow. Mm-hmm. But nice. Those just collect dust afterwards, right? I mean, I almost never use them.
No. Mm. No. I don't even have one.
Really? I was going to say, I think I have some, but I've never brought them anywhere. Mm-hmm.
Wait, you two do go to shows. I mean, don't you? I mean, it's kind of a thing. Yeah. It's how you say hello, right?
Now people just say, where can I find you? And I just say, all about Microsoft.
Mary Jo and I just bump our phones together and say, power twins activate. No, I don't know. Wow. You know, every once in a while, someone will hand me a business card and I have a momentary bit of confusion. Like, am I supposed to have? I don't have one of these things. Or I don't have it with me. You know, I feel it's like a weird moment. Like, I feel like I need to give them something in return. It's like someone comes over with a gift and you don't have anything to give them. You know?
Yeah, no, that's what it is. I mean, I know I'm handing out cards like they're candy, but it's just because I want to give you something. It's like, thank you very much for your time. Here's something and stop talking to me now.
Yes, exactly. Right. I've met the social obligation.
Exactly. And if you actually do want to see where this is going to be put up, you can contact me at this. Otherwise, I'm just going to assume that you don't care.
Yeah.
Okay.
Somebody asked me, I needed a resume for something, you know, like a year ago or more. And I was like, Throt.com? What do you mean? I don't keep track of my, you know, accomplishments. I'm not even sure what I would do with it.
Our field producer, Colleen Goldstein, she's actually really good about LinkedIn. Before she hands over her card, she'll just say, can I find you on LinkedIn? And she's just building up this huge network of all these people that she's connected to. And she says that's far more efficient. That's far more efficient than trying to take a card and then remember where it came from and who they represented 6 weeks ago. Because remember, a lot of the people that you meet don't actually work for that company. They work for a PR company that represents the company you're talking to.
Right.
You won't remember who that is unless you actually write it on the back of the card. And even then, sometimes you don't remember.
I have
to
look at the lower third there to remember Mary Jo's name. You know, I'm really not good at that kind of thing.
I have to look at my own lower third. If I don't see this thing down, wait, no, that's that. Yeah. If I don't see that.
Hi, I'm
that guy.
What does that say?
Thurfoley. Ooh,
No. There you go.
Let's not do that. All right, let's get away from social convention because we've got some pretty spectacular Windows news. Who's got this first one? Because evidently Microsoft has finally said, oh, that's right, we're not offering the free version anymore. Maybe we should kill that nag screen.
Yeah, I can start it off a bit. Yesterday, the 20th, Microsoft put out a KB article that said, hey, we're finally going to push through Windows Update, an update that takes away the Windows 10 app. So if you remember, July 29th was the actual day the offer to get a free upgrade to Windows 10 ended. And at that time, they said it might take us a little while to phase this out because we've so thoroughly inundated everyone with this app and the promotion. So actually, the real day when this ended, at least when the app ended, was yesterday. And it's starting to roll out through the Windows Update. It replaces the Get Windows 10 app, and it goes away. But the weird complication, and not complication, but the weird kind of coincidence is you actually still can get Windows 10 as a free upgrade. You just have to use your existing Windows 7 or 8.1 product key, and you can still unlock the free upgrade, which is something Microsoft's not actively advertising. But Paul has been verifying it daily.
Whoa.
I've been asking him.
Well,
is it still
weekly.
Weekly.
Because I was told that if you do the Get Windows 10 thing and then you roll it back, you're always set. You can always re-download.
Oh, yeah. No, this is for new installs. You've never done this before. You have a key. Yeah. You can do a clean install of Windows 10 right now. It'll still work.
Wait, what? That's not supposed to work.
I know.
Yeah.
But and by the way, one day it won't. I mean, you know, maybe this coming weekend, the weekend after that. Someday I'm going to wake up, I'm going to test it, and it's not going to work. You know, it's just, it will happen eventually. But I wrote an article about this not working probably a month ago in anticipation of it not working, and it just has kept working. So it's, the thing's been sitting here at my desktop since August.
So you just tried to do an update every day just to make sure it's still going?
Not every day, but, you know, at least once a week.
Yeah. Yesterday
I said to him, can you still do it? And he's like, yep, you can.
Yeah.
So wait, does this now increase the value of a Windows 10 upgrade? Because now you can't get it, except maybe if you know this super secret, now do people actually want it?
I think the issue is, well, let's see. I mean, if you wanted to save some money, I suppose you could go buy a Windows 8.1 product key or something and, you know, or you would actually buy Windows 8.1, I should say. And, you know, it's possible you could buy a copy of it somewhere cheaper because nobody wants it anymore. And then you could upgrade now for less money than buying Windows 10. Or maybe you just had keys for whatever reason as part of a company maybe that has keys allotted, or you bought the packaged version at some point. You know, maybe you bought the Windows 7 family pack back in the day and you only used two of the three keys and you got an extra one sitting around for whatever reason. If you have a key, it will work. MSDN keys work. If you got them through TechNet, that will work. And someday it won't. So we'll see.
They won't. Microsoft won't say when they think it will no longer work. In fact, they aren't really even publicly saying this still works. If you ask them, they just don't answer when you ask about this. And I assume it's the same thing as what they said was true about the Get Windows 10 app, which is it might take some time for them to shut it off. But the other theory is they're just leaving it open for those laggards who didn't get around to upgrading by July 29th. And they can say to them, you know what, by the way.
It doesn't hurt anybody, right? I mean, I think that's the point. If there are people out there in the world with Windows 7 installs they've never done, Microsoft would much rather see them be on Windows 10 if they're going to do a new install of the OS. Right. So why wouldn't they want that?
I could also see this heading off a lot of complaints from people who said, oh, man, I tried to upgrade and I totally forgot and I did it in August and it didn't work anymore. No, that's not actually a valid excuse.
That argument would work on August 20th. You know, September 21st, August or October 1st, it's starting to get, you know, to the point where you can't pretend you've been procrastinating and just forgot. I mean, at some point it's just... they're just leaving it open. It's fine. I have no problem with this.
This is actually a huge opportunity for us because I know Alex has been trying to update the TriCaster to Windows 10.
Actually, Padre, let me correct you. We shouldn't run Windows Update on the TriCaster. New Tech doesn't say you should do that. So I really hope that nothing. Oh crap!
Oh, see, this this is what happens. You get a nag screen in the middle of Windows Weekly. That's
not good.
It's oddly blocking me out entirely. That's
it is
different.
That's beautiful. No face.
Just look. Just
we're just gonna, you know, we're gonna have to live with this for the next 20 to 30 minutes because unfortunately he's clicked the initiate button and it'll take that much time to install and then uninstall.
You can still see us, though. We're off to the sides.
Sure.
Not when you zoom on us, but the big picture you can see.
Oh, my goodness.
How do I know that this graphic has been used more gleefully on Mac Break Weekly and whatever Linux show I'm sure you do?
This Week in Google. I think this is actually the new title card for Floss Weekly. Floss Weekly, we will never reserve your copy.
Okay, hold on. Let me kick the TriCaster here.
I see. Okay. That's all you need. Do either of you still have Windows 7, 8, and 10 machines in your environment?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have 7.
You don't have 10 at all? Right.
I have 10 and 7, but no 8.
Really?
Yep.
I've got 7, 8, 1, and 10. That's
you have all of them.
Well, because, I mean, 10 still does kill some of my USB devices. So my production machines have to stay 8. And I have one laptop that just works better at 7.
Mm-hmm.
Go figure.
I mean, Sorry.
I was just going to say the desktop I still use because it's just an older machine, the Dell, that I've had for a while. I just left it on 7 because I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to leave it on 7. And when I need to replace the machine, get a Windows 10 machine.
But what about all those gotta have it UWP apps you can't run? This is met by confused silence.
Now, a quick question. This really did hurt Microsoft's reputation, right? I mean, yes, that number of how many deployments they have of Windows 10 is forever going to be asterisked by people who said, well, how many of those were accidental upgrades or how many of those were installs and then rollbacks almost immediately? Will people forget this, or will Windows 10 upgrade nag screen be the butt of jokes for the next 2 decades?
I think they've irreparably harmed their reputation with this, and not just Microsoft's generally, but the reputation of Windows as well. The forced upgrade thing was a huge mistake on their part and a very risky gamble. And the reason people aren't going to forget it is because they came out and said, we're going to hit 1 billion within 2 to 3 years.
Right.
And then right before the Windows 10 free upgrade ended, they said, you know what, we're not going to make that goal. And so even though they did that, they weren't able to, you know, meet this reasonable goal, I thought, of reaching 1 billion users in that time frame.
You know, Mary Jo, there's 2 ways to look at this. There's one way, and this is where Paul lines up. There was an executive or some marketing person who said, you know what, we want to hit 1 billion because it sounds like a great number. So let's just force this on people. The other way to think of this is that some engineers said, you know what, people will like 10 if they just try it. If we just get it on their machine, they will understand what all the hoopla is about. Mm-hmm. Which of those do you fall with?
So I also, like Paul, think this was a big mistake. And the part that really kind of riled me the most was when Microsoft was taking the tack of saying, it's for users' own good that we're doing this. Right. And, you know, I was like, wait, this is so paternalistic. How can you say what's for my good or my mother's good, who accidentally got Windows 10 and like flipped out when she got it? You know, I just think that argument didn't work. I'm happy they made a free upgrade available very easily to people, but I don't think they should have rammed it down people's throat.
Yeah, I agree.
But
it's also, I don't know if this qualifies as ironic, but you know, one of the kind of contracts you enter into with Microsoft when you do install or get Windows 10 is you're accepting a constant stream of upgrades, and you really can't do anything as an individual to prevent that from happening, at least not elegantly or easily. And your introduction to this new world is Microsoft seamlessly and inelegantly jamming Windows 10 down your throat. You know, it's kind of a nasty preview of what the future holds for you when you do this. And it's just the wrong first step, you know, to present. It was a terrible mistake.
Yeah. And then the hiding of the way that you would actually accept the upgrade, where people were closing
changing
the window.
It over time. Exactly.
That was really bad. That made like a bad situation worse. So not a good look.
Yeah, I writing about this topic today, I decided not to go back and hit on every single little milestone in this because frankly, it's kind of depressing. You know, when you go back and look at the sheer amount of stuff that both of us, I'm sure, have written about this Get Windows 10 thing since last year, and the various ways they changed it silently. Some Windows update, a group of Windows updates would go out. Some of them would prevent the blockers from, you know, or the unblockers, I guess, from, you know, working. Some of them would change the way the dialogue looked or worked. You know, in the past, when you close the window, it would just go away. But at one point, when you close the window, you silently have accepted the upgrade. I mean, that's purposefully evil. It's just terrible.
It was pretty bad.
For me, I think that hurt more than anything else, because I understand wanting to force out the update, especially since they believe it's going to be much more secure. It's going to be much more feature rich. But the fact that they kept playing cat and mouse with people who just didn't want to be nagged anymore. Yeah. That's the reputation strike. It's like, okay,
right,
so just,
right.
If I went through the trouble of removing that nag screen, and then obviously I am a savvy user if I can do that. So the fact that you're trying to work around what I did, now I feel as if we're playing Microsoft Nanny State.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know, they kept saying, you know what, we're letting people get around it if they go in and edit the registry settings. I'm like, wait a second. Like, hold on. Like, that's not something most people should do. In fact, probably very few should do it. And so when that was like, hey, we're giving you an alternative to get out of it, I was like, that's not a good option.
It's not an alternative.
No.
I mean, the funny thing is, again, looking back over a year of articles about this topic, what I reminded myself of was in late June, 1 month before the free offer ended, they finally added something to that box that said, I don't want this, please stop asking me. It took them 11 mm-hmm. of the 12 months to get to that point. That's how it should have been on day one, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just, you just can't recover mm-hmm. from this. We don't know, and we may never know, the psychological impact that had on what may or may not have been very good Microsoft customers to that day, who upon looking for a new computer at some time in the future may decide they are going to get a Chromebook instead, or a MacBook, or, well, probably not a Linux computer. That's crazy. But you know what I'm saying? they're going to look at an iPad even, or some whatever, and just make that decision because they don't want to be harassed. Which is a completely reasonable request, you know. It's too bad.
Let's close the book on this bad chapter.
Yeah, I think so. It's not a mulligan, but essentially say, okay, you know what? You kind of hit some of the numbers you wanted, not the big one, but now actually show us that our faith in you is not misplaced. Because, to be fair, we could look at other companies in the industry like Google that are doing the same sort of strong arm tactic. Google right now is making a big push for HTTPS. They want everything to be encrypted end to end on the internet. That's a good goal, but some people feel that their approach is heavy-handed. Now, the new updates to Chrome are going to automatically mark any site that doesn't have HTTPS built into it as insecure. And so that little icon is going to pop up warning people that maybe they shouldn't visit the site. People think that's heavy-handed, but those looking at it say, well, this is ultimately going to lead to a better internet. You could make the same call here. You could say, look, this was heavy-handed. Oh, yeah. This was Microsoft being the worst of the nannies. But a more secure OS ultimately is a better experience.
Mm. All of the goals that Microsoft had for this were valid.
Right.
Even the self-serving ones. You know, the notion that we would all be better off if more of us were on the very latest version of the OS and were always updated to be on that version would make us all more secure because it's less work for Microsoft to do to fix the problems that are, you know, going to occur down the road. Everyone benefits from that. You can't really dispute it. The problem is when they say, oh, good, everyone agrees, good, now you're all getting the new upgrade. And it's like, whoa, hold on a second. You know, you mentioned, for example, that you have USB devices that don't work on Windows 10. I'm sure anyone listening to this has some examples of some things, whatever it might be, that don't work, you know, or some reason, whatever it may be, that they couldn't upgrade. I mean, I don't believe you can. I mean, they tried. You can't really just jam this kind of thing down people's throats.
And for our few fruit flans in the chat room right now, why is it that Microsoft trying to force Windows 10 on people was a boondoggle, whereas another company's decision to remove a standard port was brave?
Well, courage. Good marketing.
It's courage, my friend.
Courage. Maybe this was just Microsoft's courage.
Yeah.
And we're all misunderstanding it.
Okay.
Okay, I don't bite it either.
Right. It was courageous of them to attempt this.
It was. It was. Yeah. Although I will say something I really don't like is the fact that they've disabled something from 8. Because if you do Windows stacked side by side, it's pretty seamless. But if you do one on top of the other, there's always a hard break as you move between screens. Mm. In 8, you used to be able to disable that sticky window. You just move right through it. Right. You can do the same registry edit in 10, but it doesn't fix it. That never goes away, and that's I don't understand that. Go figure. All right, when we come back, we need to talk about something a bit more cheery because we've been hammering on Microsoft. So rather than talking about a forced Windows 10 update, I think maybe we should talk about some layoffs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, let's get pumped. But first, let's go ahead and take a moment to thank the first sponsor of this episode of Windows Weekly. Hey folks, do you worry about bandwidth? Because we don't. Because here at the new Eastside Studio, we've got 10 gig. Yeah, exactly, 10 gig provided to us by Sonic. Our Sonic's 10 gig fiber internet service is what we use to get out to the internet. And in other words, some sponsors, we say the show was brought to you by them. This was literally brought to you by Sonic. If you're watching the show right now, you're watching us over a Sonic connection because, well, we just love them. The internet infrastructure in the United States needs fixing, and Sonic understands that. They're not just a company that wants to sell you something every month. They're a company that wants to roll out service where service doesn't exist. They deliver fast, affordable internet, phone, and TV to homes and businesses all over California. Now, their mission is to bring internet freedom to all with unlimited and uncapped internet. They deliver residential and business fiber to the premise networks with gigabit connectivity in San Francisco, the North Bay, and the East Bay. They've got internet service that includes 15 email accounts and 1 gigabyte of storage, personal web hosting with a new domain, and fax line service for those people who still need that. Now, for only $40 a month, Sonic offers you download speeds of up to 1 gigabit. That's 1,000 megabits per second. Compare that to whoever you have right now. A home phone connection with unlimited local and long-distance calling is included in all of their service. And switching from your current carrier is easy, and you can keep your existing phone number just with the flick of a button. Now, by standing up for privacy, friendly and local customer support, uncapped bandwidth, and affordable pricing for all, Sonic's customer advocacy is paving the way for a better state of internet access in America. As we've seen throughout the industry of these last few years, when you have a provider who is willing to invest, who is willing to come into a market that was previously closed off, who is willing to, well, be an advocate for customers, everybody benefits. And that's why we just love our Sonic service. Join the internet revolution today. Visit sonic.com/twit. That's sonic.com/twit. And receive your first month of Sonic internet and phone service for free. Plus, bundle with Dish and save $120 off your Sonic bill. Visit sonic.com/twit. Once again, that's sonic.com/twit. And we thank Sonic for their support of Windows Weekly. Okay, this is one of these stories that it almost feels as if a continuation of stories that we've already covered. But who wants to talk about the bad news for pink slips over at Microsoft?
Oh, wait. Can we talk about the Skype thing first?
Okay, sure. Okay, you know what? Yeah. Let's hold off on the super awesome.
I mean, it's related, but we could kind of mix it up a little.
The people getting pink slips got them over Skype?
Yes.
That would have been interesting.
Which explains why some of them haven't gotten it yet.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, or some of them got it 17 times.
Burn.
Okay, Skype. Let's do Skype.
Yeah, so this Paul should do the SMS relay because I think you've actually looked at it, right? Or have you not?
No, well, not exactly. So how do I even explain this? But earlier this year, Microsoft announced a feature that was going to come in the Windows 10 anniversary update called Messaging Everywhere. And the idea is that you have a Windows phone or an Android phone and you can use your computer to send text messages and receive text messages, right? Like you can do it on a Mac if you have an iPhone as well. And everyone was really excited about it. Some insiders started testing it. And then very late in the game, they said, you know what? Actually, we're not going to put this in Windows 10. This makes more sense for Skype. We'll put it in the Skype preview app at some time later in the year. They yanked it out of Windows 10. Some people were disappointed, you know, because they were using it. But, you know, I think we can agree that a messaging feature makes more sense for Microsoft's messaging solution than it does for Windows specifically. So it's going to be part of Skype. So in the most recent Windows Insider build, which was released last week, I think, Microsoft added this feature in for the first time, and now they're calling it SMS Relay. Actually, they've been calling it that for some time, but it's a slightly more technical and less interesting name. And the functionality is supposed to work the same way. In this initial version, however, you need to have the latest fast ring version of Windows 10 from Windows Insiders. I think 14.9.23 or something like that. And you also need to have that same build on Windows 10 Mobile. It only works on those two systems. So I have both of these things, but I couldn't get it. I'm not seeing it on my phone. I don't know why. But the idea, again, is that you can, from the Skype preview app on Windows 10 for PCs, send and receive text messages. And so if your phone is over in the corner charging, somebody sends you a text message, you get a notification on your PC, you can click on it, you can reply to it right there. It sends out over your phone, and as you would expect. So it's coming. And it will come as part of Skype, right? So we won't have to wait for the next major version of Windows 10 to get it, which, by the way, is another one of the advantages of putting it in Skype.
You know what's weird, though? I think I messaged you about this. So I have an Android phone. I have a Windows 10 PC, and I am seeing my text messages from my phone show up on my Windows 10 PC. And I'm not on the Insider program, right?
Oh, geez, really?
So, interesting. Yeah. So I think it's because of Cortana, though, because I have Cortana on both, and I believe that also gives you some of that functionality. Yep. But then I'm like, okay, so is this in the future going to be taken out of Cortana?
Actually, it's kind of confusing because this is I wrote a book about Windows 10 that I'm still updating for the anniversary update, and one of the things I've put off literally to the very end that I will write the last of all the new content is phone integration, because it's actually a little convoluted. There are three ways right now that you can get information back and forth from your phone through Windows 10, as I understand it. One is this new SMS relay feature in the Skype preview. One is the thing you're seeing, which is the Cortana integration. Mm-hmm. But there's also like a Windows Phone integration. I will get Windows Phone notifications in Action Center on Windows 10 that are notifications that came from Windows 10 on the phone. And so they could be about anything. It will be like Facebook updates, different things from different apps on the phone. And those things will actually surface in Windows 10 on my PC as well. And so I'm still trying to kind of suss out where and how all these things happen and why. You know, it's interesting because I have three different phones. So I have an Android phone like you do, and I have the Windows phone and also an iPhone. So the iPhone doesn't really do anything. But the expectation is that you'll have a pretty decent level of functionality through Android if you have Windows 10. And then obviously if you have Windows 10 Mobile, you would have the best experience because those two things would be tightly integrated.
You know, that's something that a feature I actually would really like. Something in Windows that shows me how the various services integrate. Because it's always a crapshoot for me about what notifications I get on what devices. Like you, I've got iOS devices, I've got Windows devices, I've got Android, I've got Windows Mobile. And it always, I'm never really sure what is syncing and what is not.
It's like a roulette wheel. And just speaking Skype specifically, this morning I was chatting with Brad on Skype, and we're texting back and forth. He writes, I write, 5 minutes goes by, 15 minutes. And all of a sudden, one of my three phones, in this case, it was my iPhone, the screen lights up and I look over and it's a Skype notification of something Brad had written me on Skype about 2 minutes earlier. And so for some reason, that one version of the app on that one phone lit up. It was like all my devices are in the back, and one of them's like, I got it. You know, and it's just kind of cute. And it's like I'm having an active conversation in Skype on Windows. You know, why? why would these other things?
I know.
And you know how it is. Like if I go to my Android phone and I turn it on right now, and I go into Skype, thus waking it up, which is a mistake. It's like Jason from Friday the 13th or something. But if I do wake it up briefly, it will flash. Yeah, it does. 1, 2, 3. Conversations that are marked as unread. The conversations I had earlier with Brad, actually this one from Twit, and the conversations I had with Mary Jo. According to this version of the app, these conversations are unread.
I know.
I wish it
that
was
happens to me too. Yeah. When I've had my Windows 10 laptop off for a while, I turn it on, all the messages filter through, but then some show up as unread and some show up as read.
Yep.
So I'm not sure what makes both of those things happen.
Yeah, I ended up going into Windows 10's notifications and just turning off everything because I was so tired of receiving the same notifications 15 times.
Yeah.
Actually, there's something else there. I do love the syncing across accounts. That actually does work nicely, except for the fact that at home I've got this monster setup with two 4K monitors and a bunch of little monitors around the periphery. And it tries to import those preferences into my laptop. And it doesn't matter how many times I tell it not to do that. There's always an update and the switch gets turned back on and suddenly all the text on my laptop is tiny because it's adjusting with what it's, you know, I thinks I want on the desktop. Which, that's, again, I want some sort of central control panel that shows all my devices and which settings are moving between which devices. It sounds like that's an absolute necessity now. With all the different devices that we use and with all the syncing that Microsoft's trying to build into the products, that's a necessity.
Yeah, obviously Microsoft doesn't have a big presence / any presence in mobile. And so one of the concerns that they have that maybe Apple doesn't have, and Google only has to a lesser extent, say with iOS devices, is the cross-platform stuff. Bart W. on Twitter asked Mary Jo and I if SMS Relay is coming to the Skype apps on iOS and Android as well. And it's a reasonable expectation that it would. But, you know, of course, on Android, Microsoft has a much easier way of getting into the system and making this more seamless. Whereas on iOS, if you think about how Cortana works, you kind of have to go in and run the app for some things to happen. You know, it's never going to be as, even though it can sort of run in the background a little bit, you can never be sure that it will always be there. This is more easily done on Android and Windows phones. So have you, Mary Jo, do you know off the top of your head, I mean, has Microsoft ever spoken to SMS Relay on iOS or Android?
I don't remember them saying that.
Yeah. It seems like it would have to, though, right?
I know. It does seem like it would have to.
What would be the point of SMS Relay to Windows and mobile only?
Yeah. Right. Yep.
Mary Jo, I've got an enterprise question for you. Do we know how many versions of messaging Windows Microsoft has? Because you've got Skype. You've got Skype for Business. You've got Skype for Broadcast. And then you've got the Link stuff, which was actually supposed to take over for the Skype stuff, but then that seems to be flipped now that we've got Nadella. Do you see what's the strategy going forward? Are we just going to keep getting fractured off into different types of Skype? And do they still have that artificial delineation between consumer and enterprise?
They do. I still have the delineation. There's still Skype Consumer and Skype for Business. They're not the same product, even though they're both called Skype. And you're right. Link is still kind of hanging around for some on-premises stuff. But ultimately, the Link name will totally go away and Link will be completely superseded by Skype for Business. That will happen.
Because that was going the other way. I mean, Skype was going to go away and they were going to keep Link. And so now they've reversed on that.
Yes. So I think they're being pretty consistent on Link being supplanted by Skype for Business.
Okay.
I think next week, which is Microsoft Ignite, we might hear some new things about Skype for Business and kind of where that's going. Because every time we ask Microsoft about Skype, they'll answer Skype consumer questions, but they won't talk at all about Skype for Business. And I think next week's show, because it's a very IT pro focused show, we probably will hear some new things about Skype for Business and hopefully about how it's going to be syncing soon with OneDrive and OneDrive for Business. That's something people are really waiting anxiously for. And last we heard that was going to happen in the final calendar quarter of this year. So we're almost in the final calendar quarter. Seems like we should get some new news on that next week.
Wait, Skype for Business will sync with OneDrive?
With OneDrive for Business, yeah.
How does that, what is it syncing?
There'll be integration. Sorry, am I saying OneDrive for Business or am I thinking SharePoint? I'm thinking about SharePoint.
Okay,
sorry.
That makes sense, yes. Okay.
Sorry, I'm thinking about SharePoint when I'm saying OneDrive for Business. But in May, Microsoft talked about SharePoint and OneDrive for Business being able to actually have better sync across those two products. And they said that was going to be calendar Q4. And I think that's what we might hear about next week. But yeah, every time we ask about Skype, we heard recently that Skype is moving to this new kind of universal next generation client. And when I asked Microsoft, does that also mean Skype for Businesses is going to be on that same universal client? They said, we're not really talking about Skype for Business.
They were like, whoa. Okay, hold on.
Don't get ahead of yourself here.
Yep.
Yeah.
And don't forget the upcoming Skype for Web RTC, because, I mean, that's also another Universal client. Because you've got the Universal client and then Universal.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
But we should talk about this thing that surfaced this week called Skype for Life. Speaking of
I was just hoping we would have another Skype.
Speaking of Jason from Friday the 13th.
Okay, what is Skype for Life?
Okay, so Ars Technica, Dr. Pizza over there, got a tip from one of his sources, or maybe multiple sources, that Microsoft was working on a product called Skype for Life. And he and a lot of us at first kind of thought maybe this was a name for the universal Skype client that would work across all different platforms. That would be kind of like what Microsoft has described as the universal Windows platform equivalent, but for the other platforms like iOS and Android. But then Paul dug around a little and thought it through, and he says no. That is not what that is.
No.
Nope. Nope.
Well, no, I mean, I talked to Peter about it on Skype, ironically. And I don't doubt that he was told this. I don't doubt that the person who told him this saw this and thought they understood what they were seeing. But, you know, I talked to the Skype guys back in June or July about the strategy Mary Jo just discussed, where they're moving to new generation clients. They have updated their backend infrastructure. They temporarily have to maintain the old P2P infrastructure for certain applications or services, but that's going to be going away. The combination of these two backend services explains the Skype reliability issues that we've all seen over the past, you know, several months, I was told. And I thought, you know, Skype for Life and making yet again some new client that would somehow run across all those platforms didn't make any sense to me. And if you look at that next to their previously stated strategy, it's clear to me that Skype for Life was just a marketing term. And what they're describing internally, I think, is the culmination of that previous existing strategy that the new infrastructure is switched over to, the new clients are all available, they all interact, and they all have the new features. And it's not that it's one client. I mean, obviously, Windows will have UWP clients, iOS and Android will have native apps there, Linux will have what they have, and there'll be the web version as well. And these things will all have some baseline of functionality that works across all of them on this new infrastructure. That's the point of it.
Yeah. But you know what? I'm going to still be a doubter here. I don't think the more I think about this, the more I think you're right that it isn't a new, totally new Skype client. I think that would just be crazy and kind of going back to what they just got away from. But I think Skype for Life is something else. And the reason I'm thinking that is it's a marketing slogan, but maybe it's something like, you know how they call Skype Translator a feature of Skype? Like that's how they brand that. And Skype for Teams, which is what they're going to be doing to compete with Slack, I also think they'll call that a feature of Skype. I don't think they'll call it a new version of Skype. So I'm thinking Skype for Life might be something like using Skype to improve your life in some way. So maybe it's like, I don't know. I'm totally reaching here, but Skype, like maybe Skype and the Microsoft Health platform somehow connected, or, you know, Skype being used for some specific thing that's more about health and welfare, and maybe a very specific, almost like a vertical. I'm just guessing here again, but I think it's something else. I do.
I mean, that seems very far reaching.
Guessing.
It might just be simpler than that. You know, it's funny. We were just kind of joking around and slash complaining about how, you know, Skype will ring on various devices and whatever. But of course, we have various devices because we're nerds. And so Skype for Life could be as simple as what I think of as Skype Everywhere, this feature, you know, that a normal person with a computer and a phone or a tablet and a phone would want to get messages everywhere. And that's for life. In other words, whatever your life is, whatever your habits are, whatever devices you choose to use, Skype will be there, you know?
That could be.
But yeah. I just, you know, regardless of what it is, I mean, I think it's mostly a marketing term, right? Not so much a product. It's almost just a way to describe functionality to normal people.
Yeah, I'd be down with the marketing term. I spoke with a Microsoft rep over at IFA in Berlin last month this month. And of course, didn't want to talk about it. But what he was describing was that this is Skype UC. This is the unified communications promise. The idea of we don't want Skype to be an app. It shouldn't be something you start up. It should be something that is just everywhere just you use a Microsoft product. You should be able to say, Cortana, call Paul Thurrott, and it will automatically kick off Skype. It, and it doesn't even call it Skype. It just connects. And I can see that. Whoa. I mean, the UC promise has been something that's been around for 10 years. Maybe this is Microsoft finally saying, let's do it.
Or saying we finally have enough pieces in place where it makes sense, right? I mean, even things like integrating Skype into Outlook.com and OneDrive.com on the web, or the Outlook 2016 mail client in Office 2016, which, you know, depending on your view of things, you might find incredibly useful or incredibly annoying, right? Because certainly on the web, they don't do a good job with that. But I think that these things are all part of it's just a, it's a, how do you describe a bunch of little things? What's the theme, you know? And universal communications is how we would say it in the enterprise. And maybe Skype for Life is how they want to say it to people.
You know, Padre, you just gave me a crazy idea. Another crazy idea.
Good.
What if Skype for Life is a bot?
Oh.
You know how they're integrating more bots into Skype, right? And there's been all this talk about a concierge bot that Bing was working on for a while to be kind of like your personal assistant for life. You know, somebody who you could say, hey, what movies are playing? Can you get me some tickets? Blah, blah, blah. Maybe this is Skype for Life.
But then Skype for Life would have to fight Cortana to the death.
I know. So, yeah. Bots and Cortana, I think they're siblings. I think they're friends, but
they're twins. Skype for Life was the twin they kept in the closet until he was a teenager.
Yep.
So he's a little stunted. But we've actually got people in the chat room. We've got Hey, it's Todd, who's suggesting that Skype for Life is actually the name of a new form of judicial punishment. Mm-hmm. If you do something really, really bad, you only get to use Skype to life.
That sounds like a big punishment.
And the guy could be like, oh, I've been Skyped.
Should it just be Skype 10? I mean, because that was the whole idea of Windows 10. Is this the last Windows you will ever own? Is this Skype 10? Is it like, look,
by the way, Microsoft's doing everything to ensure this is the last Windows you'll own. God bless.
The ultimate Skype.
Yeah. Skype no, I honestly, Windows 10 is a terrible name, right? That should have just been Windows. I don't think we need to go 10. I think. If anything, we should be stripping the numbers off of the products to still have numbers.
Maybe they really want it to be Windows X. Mm.
Yeah.
Windows X.
Apple's doing that, right? Apple's changing Mac.
And they've kind of moved toward that, right? Because they still have version numbers. Obviously, you have to have this stuff behind the scenes. But, you know, they talk about the new version of Mac OS as Sierra.
Right.
You know, and they've been doing that for years, I guess. But they emphasize that, you know, it's a friendly name. And I think that's a nicer approach than some gobbledygook like HP product names or version or just not version numbers, but just numbers, or even using the version number in the name is just I think that's just old fashioned.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. I mean,
you have to especially if it's the last version of something, supposedly.
It should have just been Windows Ultimate. Oh, wait, we've already used that. Never mind. Sorry.
We have.
calling something the last version of this product is like the worst way to market something I ever invented.
I know.
You know, this is the last version we're ever going to make of Windows.
Windows.
Oh, no, we're going to keep updating it. I mean, this is the last, but this is the last one.
there'll be some serious updates to it, but no, this is it. So wait. I'm sorry.
It really is just not smart, Mark.
Yeah.
I'm going to change my name to Padre 10. I will be the last Padre you will ever know.
Actually, if you could change it to 10.01.
There'll be updates to Padre, but this is really the final version.
It's always going to be that little thing you miss.
The Padre Anniversary Edition, which is 10 pounds lighter, has all the features. Oh, gosh. All right. We're going to bog down a bit too much, and it is a fun story, but there is one more story that has so much FUD, it has to be dispelled. Paul, there were people screaming all over the internet that Microsoft is being the big bad by trying to lock Linux out of new PCs. Yeah. Is this true?
No.
Okay.
And that's all we need to say about that.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, I mean, that's just if I could somehow make a career out of just debunking stupidity, right? I mean, you get into these conversations with people on Twitter who see these stories and I think it's the way conspiracy theories work, right? It hits on your internal beliefs, and so you instantly throw common sense to the wind and say, yeah, of course they're doing this. Microsoft is evil. And it's like, guys, it's not 1998 anymore. Could we maybe upgrade the way we think about Microsoft and their relationship with Linux in particular? The topic, if you don't know what it is, I guess we should probably step back a second and say that somebody had discovered that a Lenovo PC bought from the Microsoft store, so it's a signature PC, and thus is running something called Windows 10 Signature Edition, which doesn't exist, somehow has the magic capability of preventing Linux from ever being installed in that computer. And that's not a capability of an operating system. That's something that would have to be built into the firmware, I guess, of the computer. I mean, I obviously there's always going to be some way to brute install anything on there, but you know, Reddit happens. One of the guys from ZDNet wrote a very calm and collected article about it. It wasn't sensational in any way. I appreciated that. But here's the thing. Signature PC is, as I described it, I think the smallest province of the Windows empire that exists in Microsoft. They have no power at all. The very notion that they could require a PC maker to do anything is ludicrous, let alone the world's number one PC maker. Microsoft is not in the business of blocking Linux. They never really were, but it's one of those things like a lot of people kind of like want to believe is the case. Some guy supposedly from Lenovo got into a support forum somewhere and said, yeah, this is part of our agreement with Microsoft. That's not true, by the way, because Lenovo came out with a statement and said, no, that's not what's happening. It's one of those things like you don't actually have to know the answer to know the answer. It's a little bit like the Skype for Life thing. Like if you think it through, it's like this is not what's happening. And so I'm not the one that got the statement. So for I think it was Tech Republic that got the statement, but I did a write up about it. And
this is secure boot on the UEFI, right? I mean that's all it is.
It's not exactly, but it's that exact kind of topic. Yes, Lenovo has it's probably just one Lenovo computer actually, but there is a Lenovo computer that has a very strange RAID SSD configuration. And as people are discovering, if they try to clean install Windows 10 on that computer, it won't work either. It's a very unique configuration. It's not part of a secret cabal with Microsoft to screw Linux users out of their new computer. But, you know, I think I said this to Mary Jo privately, or maybe Brad. I was chatting with somebody earlier today. I said, so kind of consider the market out there for people who are going to buy a Windows-based computer and install Linux on it, right? And there is some number. It's a small number, but there's some group of people who do that. And now let's consider the subset of those people who are going to drive to a Microsoft store, pick out their favorite signature PC configuration from the store, buy it from Microsoft, their favorite company, and then put Linux on it. I mean, like, I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but come on.
Right.
I mean, and this is Microsoft's path to world domination. We're going to do it through the signature PCs that nobody even knows exist at the stores you can't even find there where you live. It's just the whole thing is ludicrous. It's just typical. It's the watching this cascade across the internet today. It just is depressing. It's just so typical,
It destroys your faith in humanity.
Or reconfirms my belief that we're all idiots. it's sad. I mean, it's too bad.
Now, at IFA, Lenovo did show, can't remember what they call it. It's something like software services. But on boot up, you actually get the option of what packages you want to install. Yeah. So you could make it a signature
packages,
service.
You mean?
All the crapware.
That's interesting. So Lenovo's not the only PC maker starting to do that kind of a thing. And I really like this approach. It's because it's something PC makers are not familiar with. It's called customer centricity. HP's newer machines will do the same thing. And in the past, you would get a bunch of utilities and things running in the tray and blah, 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 whatever it was. Now you have to seek out those applications. And at the time that you run it, it says, hey, we have this tray thing we can put in. Do you want to use it? And if you say no, that's the end of it, And that's the way things should be, don't you think?
Yeah.
So,
well, it sure beats me having to spend the first 30 minutes of my new PC's life uninstalling everything that came pre-installed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. We will never be deemed intelligent beings by future civilizations because of things like this. It's like when you buy an electronic device and you spend the first 30 minutes updating the software, or when you buy a smartphone and you install apps and you spend the next 7 days removing or changing notifications. Or like what you just said, you buy a new PC and the first thing you do is take things away from it. It's like, this is so counterintuitive and counterproductive. And yet we just sort of accept that this is the way it is. You know?
That's what makes me so sad that signature seems to be kind of not an emphasis anymore. Because I remember when I got my Acer S7, it came to me as a signature device and I didn't even know it was going to. And it was such a different experience.
Right?
Oh, yeah. By the way, so let's see. 4 years ago this month, Microsoft opened their store in Boston, and I bought the very first computer that was sold at that store, which is a 15-inch Samsung Ultrabook. It was one of the last Windows 7 computers they sold, right? Because Windows 8 came out 30 or 45 days later. And to this day, when I restore that thing, and it goes back to that clean Windows 7 Signature Edition thing with beautiful wallpaper and, you know, no crap anywhere, it's still like this calming, almost transcendental moment. Like you open the thing up and you're like, ah, nice, you know. And that's not the reaction we typically have with PCs, right? Yeah. It's too bad.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, there is something about having to do a hard restore where you have to go back to the factory disks. Mm-hmm. And you know, anytime you do that, there's going to be hours and hours, if not days, of updates. It's going to have to go through round and round and round.
Yep.
But that's not the infuriating part for me, because that I can just leave off in the corner. The infuriating part is I know I'm already going to have an antivirus that's going to take 5 restarts to fully get rid of
because
it just sticks in there. Yeah, I'm going to have to do a little bit of registry editing to get rid of the stuff that doesn't uninstall at all.
I know we talked about this on the podcast whenever, you know, some months ago, but as part of the Windows 10 anniversary update, there's a new tool. It's not actually included in the OS, but it's linked to from the OS. And so I think people are probably familiar with the reset your PC functionality that debuted in Windows 8, also available in Windows 10. Thing is, if you use that on a PC that came from a PC maker, which is, you know, most PCs, the PC maker can edit that image that's installed. So the crapper all comes back, right? When you reset the PC, you get the crapper. But there's a separate tool called Refresh Windows. It's linked to from the same place in the Settings app in Windows 10 with the anniversary update. You download the tool, it downloads Windows 10. It's a clean version of Windows 10, and then you can install that. And then, so instead of getting the crapware-laden version you might get from, say, whatever PC maker, Dell, HP, Lenovo, whoever, you get Microsoft's clean image, right? And so the pro there is you don't get the stuff you're talking about, like the antivirus, whatever stupid utilities these people put on there. The minus side is you may not get the driver. You know, Lenovo and HP, I know, and probably Dell have decent utilities for keeping that particular machine up to date with drivers, for example. You don't get that thing. And so you might have to do a little bit of extra work if you want some of that stuff or if you need it. You know, if you look in Device Manager and some of your stuff hasn't been recognized, you know, you might find yourself going to the HP or Dell or Lenovo, whatever website, and downloading the drivers. But at least you have that option now. And so I think that's a lot closer to a signature PC type experience, except that it's not fine-tuned for your exact computer, which was the point of Signature, one of the points of Signature.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone wants an almost Signature series, just buy the retail version of the operating system.
Yeah.
And that's what you get. And yeah, it sounds stupid, but it really, there is something that is so nice about starting up a PC and realizing the only thing on here is the bare OS. Everything that gets added on is my choice.
Yep.
And that's, by the way, another thing I think we all do with these devices. It doesn't matter what you're talking about, a phone, tablet, computer. That first day, you install the things you know you need, right? Just the absolute necessity.
Yeah, for example, I use IE to install Chrome.
Yes, exactly, which I believe is the only reason it exists. over time, as you use the device, whatever it is, you know, PC, tablet, whatever, you realize, oh, wait, I need this thing too, and I need this thing too. And it spirals, right? And so over time, you fill the thing up, and you know, there's a bunch of junk on there. But those first couple of days are wonderful. You know, it's like the, you know, the out-of-the-box thing is kind of, it should be. I mean, it's not always with a PC if you get the wrong kind, you know, that's what it is. And so we kind of try to recapture that magic every once in a while. Let's just reset it back to the metal, you know?
We do have to talk about the layoffs at some point because it is a big story, and it's not totally happy, but it's also not totally unexpected, right?
Right.
I mean, we saw this.
Yeah, we did. And, you know, I think a lot of people forgot, but in July, Microsoft announced through an SEC filing that they're going to be laying off almost 3,000 more people this fiscal year, which is their fiscal 2017. Over the weekend, there was a report by the Financial Times that Microsoft was closing Skype London. And I saw some people report this as and laying off 400 people, but actually the number that Microsoft is laying off is closer to 230, I think. I called them and asked them how many people is it? And they said it's about 230. And that's a combination of people who work for both Skype and Yammer in London. Some people will be moved to the Paddington office. Some are just going to be let go. They also, last week, Paul and I kind of were catching bits and pieces of this through Facebook because we saw different people we knew posting to Facebook that they had been cut. But they cut another 300 people on top of that, mostly from the Puget Sound, Redmond area, and a few people from other geographies around the world. These 500-plus layoffs that happened last week are part of that 2,850 that they announced in July. This isn't a new group of people who didn't, you know, who Microsoft said, and we're adding another 500.
Right.
These are people, all different divisions, not all concentrated in one division, except for the Skype and the Yammer part, that are being let go across the company. Microsoft's definitely continuing to tighten, you know, belt tightening across the company, getting rid of people. Before, the layoffs were largely Windows Phone related and Windows Mobile. These new ones are not, because they've pretty much laid off all of those people. Originally, it was a bunch of the Microsoft salespeople because they had a sales reorg this year when Kevin Turner left. Now we're getting into the product areas. Some people in Windows, some in Office, people across different parts of the company. So if you hear about layoffs that happened recently, that is what happened.
Yeah, a lot of my Microsoft contacts are heads down right now. Not necessarily because they're fearing this round, but because they realize, you know what? Microsoft is actually, they're not doing the cutthroat competition anymore, but they are looking through the various departments and finding out, do you have any personnel that have not really contributed anything in the last 5 years?
I think the HR term for these people is deadwood.
Yeah, and it's right. I mean, it's always difficult to talk about someone like that, but if you've been at a company for 20 years and you haven't really been challenged, or maybe you've become really, really cynical, it might be time to move on.
Yeah,
I've seen that.
No, in over the past year or two, as we talk about layoffs, obviously there's the human side to it. It's always very tragic for people to lose their jobs. But looking at the company from sort of a Microsoft watching perspective, I think Mary Jo would agree this is a very big and in some ways still bloated company with lots of levels of hierarchy and management and so forth. And the people I know personally from Microsoft are two of one, very smart people. Mm-hmm. They do want to change the world. But I think the system they're in might be a little too big and complex, you know, for things to happen. And so it's possible that Nadella is making these changes, like many of the changes he's made to speed response time, make sure they're focusing on the right things, you know, all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, CR1 in the chat room is saying how, they're downsizing their way to success. And I know that it's very easy to see it that way, but there's another view. And if you take a step back, you can actually see it. I know Mary Jo and Paul, you've both seen this because you cover Microsoft so deeply. But especially during the bomber years, there were little fiefdoms that developed in Microsoft. And the fiefdoms were all about how many employees were under your thumb. And so you had these little...
That was awesome, wasn't it?
You had these little princes who were accumulating kingdoms, not really caring about the productivity they were getting out of people. They just cared about how many people they were in charge of. And you suffer from that.
There's actually another side to this. With power comes the availability to influence direction. Right. And I always think back to this one example. I'm not saying that this product would have been successful, but at the time when Steven Sinofsky was running the Office group, there was a project that came up from, I don't remember what group it was, but it wasn't Office, but it was basically an attempt to put Office in the cloud at the time. They didn't call it the cloud, but it was called NetDocs. And he killed it because it competed with Office. Right. And the theory here is that Microsoft might have come out with something that was Google Docs and all that stuff years earlier, if they just hadn't been so, or if the people in power hadn't been so concerned about protecting their products, you know, that you couldn't compete with something like Windows or Office. If you did that, you were out. You had to support that.
Right.
Now, it's possible and probable that NetDocs was a joke, that it was based on ActiveX, that it was stupid, whatever. I don't know. But you know, but that's the type of thing that happens in that kind of organization.
All right. Plus, you know, we've talked about this a lot, but the emphasis of Microsoft these days is very different from the old Microsoft. You know, Windows was the main cash cow of Microsoft for years. Now everything has to be about the cloud for them. And the shareholders want that. The Wall Street analysts want that. So if you're working in a group that's Windows related, you know, they're definitely going to be kind of putting the squeeze to you, I think. And if you're doing something that's more cloud focused, enterprise focused, something that's about collaboration, teamwork, that kind of gives you an edge. And I think it's also just about job kind of, I don't know, not restructuring, but more just like changing of the emphasis at about what matters and what's going to make the money for Microsoft.
Right.
So some of that's at play too.
Well, you know, I think we talked about this on Windows Weekly, the notion, you know, the newer Surface devices say Microsoft on them, right? Mm-hmm. It's this one Microsoft notion. Like, we're moving forward as one company, not as the, you know, the guns pointed at each other, all the little fiefdoms that we were just talking about. You know, it's a new, for Microsoft, you know, a new way of doing things.
Right. And that's why I actually still am very bullish on Microsoft. I love what Nadella has done. That idea of taking down the ramparts and making the little princes actually work with one another.
Yeah.
It doesn't work any other way. Although
change is hard, though. You know, a lot of these, because, you know, externally, I agree with you, right? I think this stuff is necessary. It's exciting for Microsoft. It's a company that in many ways has become so calcified, you know, to see them reacting to things quickly and moving quickly. It's very exciting and hitting the right products and things. But I know from personal experience with different people, this change is very hard for some of the people there, and not just the ones who have been let go now, but just people who see projects just disappearing, you know.
Mm-hmm. But then there are some other people who the opposite's true. Like, they've been champing at the bit forever to like work with teams across teams, and they're like, oh, finally, they're letting us talk to each other. Before that wasn't really encouraged or even allowed, right? So those people are really happy.
And not to hammer on Steven Sinofsky, but what the heck. You know, when they did Windows 8, right, they went to the Windows Phone team and said, show us the Metro stuff. And they said, here you go. And from the Windows Phone perspective, they thought, great, we're going to collaborate with these guys. We're going to come up with this cohesive system. Nope. They never talked again. You know, the Windows Phone guys were always the B team to the Windows guys. Now in Windows 10, with him gone and, you know, different people in place, that is what's happening. But it happens 3 to 5 years too late. This is stuff that should have happened on day one. It's these things should have evolved together. You know, you could have made the case back in, I guess we're talking 2010, 2011, 2012, certainly, that Windows Phone had been in market, had matured to some point, and that if you're going to go to market with an RT-style tablet device, it should have been Windows Phone OS. It was already there. It had apps. It was all there. But no, they started over from scratch. They created another Windows system that ran on ARM instead of, you know, basing it on the thing they already had. Very, very strange.
About 10 years ago, I had a contact in the Xbox division and a contact in the Windows division. And we had a weird exchange over the course of 6 weeks where basically they were using me as an intermediary to pass messages to one another. And I was like, you work literally 400 yards away from each other. What's going on here?
And by the way, if they're still there and on the same teams, they all work for the same guy now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know,
that's one organization now.
That's why they were emailing through me. They're like, we can't be seen to be emailing one another. Someone will see it and get really upset. And I was thinking, that is so dysfunctional. That is the worst kind of triangulation ever.
Like Ray Ozzie, remember when he was the chief scientist or whatever, chief software architect.
Chief software architect,
You know, he allowed teams to compete on, you know, file sync technologies and things like that. And instead of determining, you know, here are the best ideas from each group, let's make one thing. You allow this internal competition to occur. And what happens on the outside is you see that they have three different file sync solutions at the time of four. And which one do I take a bet on? And why are there so many? And doesn't this show a lack of leadership, you know? And I'm sure there are management strategies or theories that this is a good way to do things, but we know from experience with this particular subject that, you know, that didn't go very well, right? Mm. I mean, eventually it all became OneDrive, you know, but for several years there were many, many different solutions.
There were. I remember when all those Sync engines were out there, and it was like, and when they talk mesh. About Sync, you're like, which one are they talking about right
it's
now?
Sync Toy. I'm not going to remember all of them. I mean,
no, there are a lot.
Windows Live Sync.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously.
It was a sequel one. The sequel team was doing a whole different Sync thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, it's like the mosh pit theory of management. You know, like, let them fight it out.
Yeah.
I prefer the days of ActiveSync, where there was ActiveSync and then ActiveSync for mobile and ActiveSync for enterprise, ActiveSync for Exchange, because that really made it, you know, very easy to understand.
What do you call it when you reuse an acronym? What's that called? We double it up or whatever. It's like they did that with ActiveSync. Like ActiveSync was just overused, you know, as a term.
Someone just thought it sounded like a really cool name, so they wanted to use it on as many products as possible. And it took me a while to realize that two products that were called ActiveSync actually had there was no sharing of the code base between them.
And those guys probably hated each other.
Yes. Well, because it was the Exchange side, and then it was the mobile side.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't, I mean, they were competing with each other.
I remember the Sprinting Green Circle very well. I still have nightmares about it.
And that's what happens when you build a dysfunctional company. Mm. All right. When we come back, what's it going to be? Wearables? Ignite? What do we want to talk about?
Ignite? You mean like the Note 7?
Yeah. It's too soon. Too soon, man. Too soon.
I think let's do wearables because everybody wants to know what's going on with the band.
Of course. So we'll be banding up in just a bit. But first, let's go ahead and take another break because we need to thank another sponsor of Windows Weekly. Hey, folks, do you read? Well, of course you read, but you probably don't read as much as you want to. I know I don't. There came a time when my schedule just got so full that I don't have those free evenings to curl up with a book. I can't do that hour of reading in the midday. I don't have the breaks I'd like to pick up my favorite pieces of fiction and nonfiction. Well, there's a new way to read with your ears. That's right. It's called Audible. Now, I spend a lot of time in the car, probably about 2 hours every day, coming up and down from San Francisco to Petaluma. And I spend a lot of time in the air. In fact, I just spent, 27 hours in the air going to and from IFA in Berlin. I'm going to spend another 30 hours going over to Rome at the end of this month. It's nice to have my favorite books, the books that I want to read, that are on my wish list, ready to go with the touch of a button. Well, that's exactly what you get with Audible. Audible is a leading provider of audiobooks across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. They offer a language instruction and foreign language course in audiobook format, so you could always be improving yourself, no matter what you're doing, no matter where you're going, no matter how busy your schedule might be. Well, for listeners of Windows Weekly, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One audiobook that I absolutely recommend. I recommend it to everybody. In fact, I've been recommending it since it first came out, and that is The Martian by Andy Weir. This book is absolutely fantastic. If you liked the movie, you will love the audiobook. I'm actually addicted to this. I do a lot of trips over to Las Vegas, and this is just about the right length to get me from here to there. It's all about a man trying to survive on his own with nothing but his wits and his biology skills. Now, if you want to find out what it's like to live on the red planet, if you want to listen to a premise that is fresh, that is not based off of a comic book, that is not based off of a series, you've got to try The Martian. It's free because you're a listener of Windows Weekly. Now, to download this audiobook for free or another one of your choice, you can go to audible.com/windows. That's audible.com/windows. Of course, I don't want to give you just my pick. I know this is supposed to come later in the show, but Paul, you're a big audiobook listener as well, yes?
Maybe.
You were teasing me with a pick that was going to change my life.
Well, I like personal tech industry picks when possible. There really aren't that many really good ones. We had talked about Masters of Doom, which is the story about the id Software guys, read by Will Wheaton, which is fantastic. I had recommended that one some time ago. Someone who listened to it and loved it recommended one back to me. I bought it. I haven't actually started it yet, but this is the next book. It's called Console Wars.
Ooh.
Sega, Nintendo, and the Battle That Defined a Generation. And if you think back to the history of the video games in particular, the Nintendo Sega stuff of the late 80s, early 90s is kind of the second major generation of video games, you know, Atari, Odyssey, Intellivision, ColecoVision, et cetera, being the first generation. And so it's the story of these companies and you know, how Nintendo and then eventually Sega and I assume Sony, you know, kind of just changed things through the early 90s.
Right. Well, there you have it. You've got a older fiction pick for me. You've got a nonfiction pick for Paul. You can pretty much find everything in between at audible.com. Now, this offer works for one credit books. There are very few that are two credit that won't work with this offer. But if you want to try out Paul's book, if you want to try out mine, you need to try audible.com. And we thank Audible for their support of Windows Weekly. Okay, so we've got some wearables. I did see a few of these in Berlin, and they looked wearable. They looked interesting. But should I be excited, Mary Jo?
You know, I don't have a smartwatch. I did use the Microsoft Band for a bit of time, and I thought it was okay. I used the Band too, but I still haven't really seen any wearable device and I'm like, yes, I would pay that. I would wear that. And now, if you are a fan of Microsoft Band, we talked last week on the show that we had heard some rumors that Microsoft may be no longer making the bands after Band 2. Right after the show ended, a day later, we found out that Microsoft was rebranding the Microsoft Health application to Band. So people who are downloading the Microsoft, the updates to the Microsoft Health application for iOS, Android, and Windows, were seeing suddenly that it was called Band instead of Health. Microsoft hasn't really said what's going on with that, but my sources said to me that what they think is that Microsoft's rebranding Health to Band because right now the Microsoft Health app that exists really just is meant to sync with the Band. It's supposed to work with Microsoft Band. I think what they're going to do is come out with another new app that will be called Microsoft Health and that will work with the Microsoft Health service on all different kinds of devices, not just the Band. It'll be able to work with Android devices, different kinds of phone platforms, all different kinds of things. And I think the reason they're doing this is Microsoft's priority going forward in this space is the health service and the health applications and not so much the actual Band hardware, which has been something that a lot of people love but has had kind of mixed success. And in fact, the Band 2, a lot of people have had problems with it splitting and they've had to return it. And I just think Microsoft's kind of in a place right now where maybe they're thinking about a new wearable at some point. Maybe it'll be another kind of a fitness band that'll be branded Surface someday. But I think the Band line, as we know it, is done. And now we're going to see them talk about health, the health service and the health app and not so much the Band.
I think they're going to call it a Band for life, I think.
No, don't give them any ideas, please.
How did you find out about our secret plans?
Actually, maybe Mary Jo is right. Maybe the Band is now called Skype for life. You're going to wear Skype.
Oh, jeez.
Because that makes sense. Totally. Do either of you wear a Band? I like the Band. I did try it out. Do you wear it on a daily basis?
No.
I mean, I switched to Fitbit 3 months ago-ish. I mean, you know, I really like the Microsoft Band for what it is. I think it makes a great compromise is the wrong place. It's a nice middle ground between an expensive and complex smartwatch and a lower-end kind of fitness tracker, right? I think it's got the right mix of functionality. I think the thing that really kills it beyond the reliability issues, which, you know, came to light over time, is just you're looking at one day of battery life, right? That's the problem with the Apple Watch. It's the problem with a lot of these devices. You know, a Fitbit Alta, I think, is the one I have. The thing lasts for 7 or 8 days on a charge. It's incredible. Right. And it accomplishes the same basic things that I like the most about wearables today, which is somebody texts you and you can see what it is. You get, you know, reminders to get up and move around. It does the fitness tracking kind of stuff. So, I think they're just running into a marketing issue. And on the one hand, where, you know, no one even knew this thing existed, they didn't do a good job of selling it, and just a battery life limitation. You know, Apple, I know, wanted to put cellular connectivity on the new Apple Watch, and they didn't. Because of the battery life stuff. There was just no way to cram that thing in there and make it work.
Well, let's not say that because Samsung did. So Samsung's got their new Gear S3
yeah.
which does have a cell radio in it and Bluetooth mm-hmm. and Wi-Fi, and it runs for 4 days. So
what I meant was Apple couldn't do it.
Apple couldn't do it, right.
So, one of the things that Microsoft did with the original Microsoft Band that was pretty impressive was just put that much in there in a sensor sense. I think there were 11 sensors in the first device. The second one added one or two other sensors. You know, they have a barometer for altitude and so forth. That kind of data collection is really exciting. You know, let's see what we can do with that. The problem is they never really did much with it, you know, and of course they don't do a good job of selling it. And then, as Mary Jo pointed out, sadly, the second one had the same exact reliability issues as the first. And that's, I think that was just kind of the end of it right there.
They also, at least at some point, were kind of contemplating the idea of putting Windows, some variant of Windows 10 inside the band. The band 1 and band 2 both had firmware inside. It was not Windows inside. And right before...
It's basically Linux, by the way.
Is it really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right before we get all these tips about Microsoft maybe ceasing work on the band, I had heard from one of my contacts that the team that was supposed to try to get Windows 10 to work on the band had been disbanded. So I think, the idea was, let's make this part of the Windows 10 family, right? Like everything else is. Everything else is running the core of Windows 10, the common core. So why not have the band do that too? But for whatever reasons, they decided that wasn't going to work, not feasible. And so maybe it's they go back to the drawing board now, come up with a new wearable that is Windows 10 core from the get-go.
I was thinking, as you were talking about other wearables, which Brad, who I work with, has heard as well, I was thinking, you know, they have to be looking at Windows 10. This is the point, you know, the universal platform, that they can add that to the list of targets you can have as a developer. I think mm-hmm. that has to be part of it, yeah.
Me too.
I'm still not really sold on the wearable tech, and I've covered it extensively. Mm-hmm. I've had a bunch of really good pieces of tech in my lab, but ultimately I don't want anything on my wrist. In fact, this is you mentioned battery life. This is the problem with the technology that was generously donated by Leo Laporte, basically because I've waited for him to remove things from his office to go on the free table, and mm-hmm. I just followed him, and I got myself a Moto 360. It's a fantastic piece of tech. But because I take it off and because you have to charge it on that little awkward docking station, I sometimes forget it on my lab table. By the way,
you were just saying, do you have a band? And I went upstairs and changed. I actually took the Fitbit off. I left it up in my bedroom. So I actually normally have it on, but right now it's not. That's just a coincidence. But the problem I have with that exact device you're talking about, I have one as well, the Moto 360 or the Apple Watch, is that these are... You would get used to it because if you just use the one device, but it's as a kind of a strap that you have to kind of connect right. and everything. It's a fairly, you know, you balance the thing on your wrist and I've tested different devices. Like I sometimes don't spend enough time with any one device. Like the Fitbit is very simple to clasp. The Apple Watch I find in the Moto 360, you have to get used to it, right? It's like tying shoes. You have to do it a bunch of times, you know, so you can get good at it.
I have to think eventually I would get used to it because I wore a watch for the first 20 years of my life. But since then, I don't want anything on my wrist. It just feels weird. Even after a couple of hours of it being on my wrist, I still feel it there and I still want to take it off.
Hmm. I wear a regular watch still.
And really?
I feel weird when I don't have it on.
What do you do with that?
I actually use it to tell time.
Oh.
I know. What a thought.
I thought watches only do things like give you really abbreviated versions of the text messages so that you have to reach into your pocket and take out your phone.
When people got laptops and then smartphones, you know, you get into that kind of meeting joke where like people are sitting there doing their own thing on their devices and they're not paying attention to whatever the person who's speaking is saying. And that's considered rude. It might be unprofessional, whatever. And so, you know, one of the big defenses about a wearable is, like, you know, if you're wearing a smartwatch, you can kind of casually glance down at your watch. It's not as obvious or as terrible as looking at like a phone screen or tablet or a PC or whatever. But, you know, I think nothing signals to the people you're talking to that you're not paying attention more than when you do this kind of thing where you're like,
I know.
You know, yeah. I mean, it just.
Or it looks really, like you're bored, right? And you're is this over yet? Yeah.
We almost done here? Wrap this up soon?
I do. I love sitting at a table when someone's wearing a smartwatch. And I you could tell they don't want to be rude, but their eyes keep going down to their wrists like this. And you're like, I know what you're doing. Just take out your phone, man.
Sure. You should just start asking Siri questions.
Siri, delete that email.
Yeah. As my daughter once did, she walked into my office and she said, Xbox off.
Oh, and actually across the internet, there are cries of anguish because people were watching Windows Weekly while playing Gears of War.
Cortana, what's the weather? Sorry.
Oh, no. I don't know. I understand that wearables have a bright future. I understand that it's a big profit center. I understand it has to be a part of any cloud strategy because it's a great way to get data metrics. But I'm not completely sold. Mm. Go figure. Anything else about wearables or should we move on to cloud?
Sorry, I was looking at the smartwatch. I missed what you just said. Okay.
That's about right. Are we done with wearables?
Yeah, let's talk cloud.
Let's talk cloud because this actually is exciting, interesting, and worthy of a postmortem. What happened? Microsoft suffered a major cloud hiccup, and a few people picked up on it quickly. Actually, Mary Jo, you were one of the very first who was able to confirm that there was outages of various Azure services. What happened?
I didn't. It wasn't any kind of great thing that I did. All of a sudden, I came on Twitter last Thursday morning and everybody was tweeting to me like Azure is down. It's a huge outage. So I looked at the status page and they were having a giant DNS outage for Azure. So that ended up taking down like almost every Azure service or at least limiting service on it. I mean, everything was going down. Azure Media Services, Azure Search, HD Insight, everything was, it was like a cascading thing. And then there were no workarounds being posted and people were just saying, I can't do anything. I'm like totally stuck. I cannot do anything. I'm just sitting here twiddling my thumbs. So after a couple of hours, Microsoft got DNS back up. But then in the central part of the United States, people were still having SQL outages. Then after everything seemed to be solved, I started getting people tweeting me about OneDrive being down. And I don't know if the OneDrive part was connected to the original DNS outage because parts of OneDrive do run on Azure. I never could confirm that was connected, but it seemed to be right around the same time. And that outage hit a number of people in Europe and the US, I think also India, for a number of hours. And Microsoft wouldn't say anything about that one. I couldn't get anything. Just that we know some customers are experiencing problems and we're working on it. That's it. So if you want to know more about the specifics about what happened and what Microsoft's saying they're going to do going forward to try to prevent this, if you go to the Azure status page, that you can just search for that Azure status page, and you look up in the history September 15th, you'll be able to see the whole postmortem and dissection of what went wrong and what they intend to do to try to shore that up going forward.
Right. I think
it wasn't a good day.
It wasn't a good day. And I think the official position was that it was a spike in network traffic that brought down DNS, which, I mean, suspiciously sounds like it was attacked. And that's what a spike is.
That's what some people thought. Yeah. Some people thought that. Some people were like, it must be a denial of service. I'm like, well, I don't know if it is, but they're not saying that's what it is. But who knows?
But I'm with you. The far more interesting part of the story is not that there could have been a denial of service against Microsoft DNS because that could happen anywhere. The more interesting part is the services that are actually linked together by Azure.
Mm-hmm.
It does give you a sneak peek into some of the inner workings that Microsoft has been very recalcitrant to explain.
Right. I mean, we know there are tons of services available on Azure. If you go on at the Azure page, you can see they have so many different products now working on Azure, plus a bunch of other services that are parts of things. Like not all of Xbox Live runs on Azure, but some pieces of it do too. So when Azure has a major problem, it affects pretty much everything. Office 365, I mean, they're connected in there too. So yeah, when you have something like a DNS outage, pretty dire and something they needed to fix as quickly as possible. I will give them credit that they were giving people very regular updates, but the updates weren't very encouraging. It's like, yeah, we know this is down and we're trying to fix it. That was kind of it. So at least they were acknowledging they knew and they were working on it. Because sometimes the health dashboard goes down too in Azure, and then you it looks, when you look at it, like everything's good, but nothing's working. So at least this time that was not the case.
Right. And the thing about Azure is it is a self-healing network, and it should be able to route around problems. And the fact that it did come back up relatively quickly for such a large network, that is a testament to the technology. But there is no such thing as a network that cannot be brought down. There's always going to be, as long as it's using the networking protocols that we have today, you can take it down if you if you had enough resources. But Paul, let me ask you about this. There was a saying in the early days of cloud computing, in the early days of, say, like the Google Chromebook, that, oh, this sounds like a good idea to move everything into the cloud until you lose internet connectivity. And then that one bad day makes the entire investment worthless. This was the bad day. This was businesses in the middle of the workday not being able to access Office 365, their OneDrive, to different degrees. Did this kill it? Did this make it an incredibly bad day and now makes the investment useless?
No. I the thing that's always lost in these discussions is that cloud computing is not an all or nothing affair. When you talk about things like email, obviously, if it's cloud hosted, I mean, it is cloud hosted even before we had a cloud. If that thing is down, it's down. I mean, there's nothing you can do about that. But, you know, your data should be synced to your client. Your application should be running on your PC. I mean, as an Office 365 user, you should still have access to functionality. And so it's not all or nothing. You know, I still think that the promise of the cloud is met by today's infrastructure, you know, but that it can only get better with more pervasive connectivity, et cetera, of course. But I don't know. I honestly, for all of the kind of Chicken Little stuff that goes on with cloud computing, even today, these things are kind of rare, aren't they? I mean, we don't really have weekly Office 365 or Gmail outages. It doesn't really work that way.
No, I think one thing that bugged a bunch of people in Europe about this one last week was the week before that there had been a pretty, not as pervasive, but another outage that affected Azure, and people were like, "Wow, twice in 2 weeks, what the heck, Microsoft? You know, come on." So I agree, it isn't something that happens every day, and I don't think it's a reason to just abandon cloud computing or say, "Oh, that's why I'm not doing the cloud," because, you know, your own company servers go down too if you're running your own servers. Mm-hmm. But I think the fact that those two things happened back to back got some of the people, especially in Europe, kind of agitated, and understandably so. Yeah.
You know, this is why you've got a company like VMware, which has admittedly had some bad years as people have been moving away from virtual machines into containers. But they're betting everything on their NSX platform. And the NSX platform, in short, is a way for enterprises to be able to do hybrid deployments. So on-premise, and not just on-premise in cloud, but on-premise and in multi-cloud. In other words, they want to make it as easy to run in Azure and AWS and Google Web Services and the premise at the same time, so that theoretically, as long as your network is up, has some sort of connectivity, you should still be able to continue working. And I think we're going to see more of the big players, including Microsoft, who will take that view of, we will let you run your Azure services on another web service to give you that measure of security that you will always be able to get to it, even if one of these services goes down. I see that becoming popular. Or no?
Yeah, I hadn't heard about that, actually. So that's kind of an interesting thing. Something to listen for next week. See if Microsoft talks about that at Ignite at all.
Yeah. Right. No, it will be a brave, brave new world. Speaking of brave new worlds, there was a story that we actually talked about the last time I stepped in for Leo. I think it was back in June, of Microsoft announcing an Azure service that was in Germany. And the big news about that was it would be entirely in Germany. So all the data would be stored in Germany. They would never allow any of the data to go into a data center that was not in Germany, because Germany has really good privacy laws. And Microsoft was saying, we will not even have access to it. We're going to give everything to a caretaker, a third party in Germany.
Ich ein Berliner or something?
Ich bin ein, if you are a citizen of the cloud, you are a citizen of Germany. And I say to you, ich bin ein Azurler.
Azure. Yeah.
But Paul, what's this all about? It's finally up.
This is I have no idea what this is about.
This is Mary.
This is me.
Mary.
I have heard of Germany.
So right. You've heard of Germany. Good. So today is the day that this new Microsoft region in Germany, there's two data centers that it actually was turned on and open for business. So it's a big data sovereignty story, like you just said, Padre. It's something, you know, Microsoft hasn't been able to completely block access to customers' data from governments when requested, and that's what their whole Ireland case is about that they've been fighting there. But they're trying to kind of get around this in different ways. And this German data center idea where T-Systems, which is a Deutsche Telekom subsidiary, is acting as the data trustee in this data center, is coming to play. So if you can decide you want Microsoft to be the one accessing the data there, or you can say, no, I don't even want Microsoft in here. I want T-Systems to be my administrator here in Germany. So any Azure service that can run in these data centers is going to have the same protection. So for example, IoT. IoT is running in these data centers, I believe Office 365 also. So you'll still have that benefit and offer of having an external trustee be the one administering your data. And the data will stay on premises there in Germany. So kind of cool, a workaround for Microsoft to try to say, you know what, we're taking your privacy seriously, people, and here's what we're trying to do to kind of not get around the law, but find another creative way to ensure data sovereignty.
I don't think they're getting around the law. I think they're trying to fill in a void where the law has not caught up.
Exactly.
There have been some very high-profile cases involving Microsoft and data security. The most high-profile of them would be the case in Ireland about whether or not a U.S. court could compel Microsoft to give them information that was stored on a server that was on the land of another sovereign country. And Ireland was a little bit iffy because they were going back and forth about what was allowed by treaty and what was not. But with Germany, it's very clear. You cannot step onto German sovereign soil and demand something from a data center. And that's why Microsoft set this up. But who's gonna buy this? Who's gonna want this service? Who's gonna demand this service?
I think a lot of customers in Europe, right? For sure. I've even had people asking me, if I'm not based in Germany, could I transfer my data from another data center to this one? And I don't know the answer to that. I think I did ask Microsoft that, but I haven't heard back. So I think people are very interested and curious about how that's going to work.
Yeah, I'd be too surprised if they allowed that.
I would too. But yeah, we'll see.
Actually, PS Chops in the chat room has an interesting point. He says, as the law catches up, we could have a data privacy cold war. You have different countries saying, if you let them into the data for our citizens, we'll let them into the data for your citizens.
Oh, I was right. And we'll also have a situation where who's going to be the Cayman Islands or the Switzerland of, you know, data storage?
Data's the new currency. Absolutely.
We're not going to let anyone in.
And then you'll have that country saying, well, if we didn't do this, another country would. So we're just providing a service that's necessary. Did we just come up with a new data laundering scheme?
Yeah,
I think we did.
Will I have to declare my data for tax purposes? Is this how this is going to work?
You may. Yes.
I don't like this. All right. You know what? We've talked enough about enterprise. I want to get into some gaming. And if only there was a member of this panel who knew something about gaming.
I'm ready. Let's go.
Go, Mary Jo. Yep. I understand you're a big Gears of War fan, right, Mary Jo?
Oh, yes, I am.
You're all about the shooting and the... What weapons do they have in Gears of War? I don't even know this game.
What weapons?
I'm assuming there's some guns and some knives, right?
Cats. I heard there are cats.
Yeah, cats are ultimate weapon. No, but Paul...
Guns with chainsaws.
Can you tell me a little bit about the Xbox S and their Minecraft bundle? Because Microsoft has been conquering the world with Minecraft.
Yes. Yes, they have. You know, since the Xbox One S came out in early August, they've been kind of bulking out the lineup with different bundles. You know, there's a Gears of War 4 bundle, for example, which is ridiculous looking, but... the Minecraft one looks really good, actually, especially if you haven't bought into this yet in the Microsoft ecosystem, because it's no more expensive than the normal console, but you get the game for free, obviously, on Xbox One. You get the game for free on Windows 10. And then you get a bunch of favorites and builders packs, just downloadable content that you normally would have to pay for, all bundled into this thing. And so for $300, I mean, this is actually, it's a great deal. And Minecraft is amazing. And so if you've never experienced Minecraft, I mean, this is a great way to get into it. So that's kind of a cool one. And then the Gears of War 4 news is that the game was completed this week, so it's gone gold. It's being released in October, and if you pre-order it, you can play it. I think it's 4 days early, so I believe it comes out on October 11th. And those who pre-ordered it, I don't know if you have, probably digitally, obviously, can start playing it on the 7th. And so this is a new kind of a rejiggering of the story. You know, so there was a trilogy of Gears of War games that came out on Xbox 360. It was made by a third-party developer who, why can't I think of the name of the company? That's crazy. It doesn't matter. They sold it to Microsoft, and so now Microsoft Mojang. Is using this. Say again?
Mojang.
No, Gears of War.
Oh, Gears of War. Oh, wasn't that just 360 Studios?
Mm-mm. No, it was the Cliff Bleszinski guys, which like, it kills me when I can't think of stuff. Nope. No, Bungie's
I'm
Halo.
I'm just guessing.
Oh, wait. Is it the same studio that did Bioshock?
Nope. this is embarrassing. So anyway, whoever it was.
Yeah. Atari?
Epic Games.
Wow. Epic Games. Thank you. So they did the original trilogy on the 360. It was a 360 exclusive. Well, it was a Microsoft exclusive. The first Gears of War game actually shipped on Windows. And then they did the 360 version. And so now on the Xbox One, we have the original game is available remastered. The other games are available in backwards compatibility. And now we're getting a new fourth game, which takes place, you know, 20-some years later. There's, you know the story. The hell breaks loose, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a pretty big deal because, you know, exclusives kind of drive console sales and so forth. So Microsoft has had Halo and Gears too. And so Gears, having a new series of Gears games coming now for the Xbox One is kind of a big deal. So we shall see. Someone in Twitter says, in software. Nope.
It's kind of interesting that's October 11th because that's also a big day for Dynamics 365. Just saying.
yeah, and I'm sure that's not coincidental.
I'm sure it's not.
Well, I mean, Dynamics is one of the most profitable divisions Microsoft currently has. So, I mean, naturally. Do you see the tie-in, right? Let me ask you this. We're thinking about doing a little Gears of War thing here at the studio because Leo's got his Xbox. Yep. I've actually got an Xbox One S on its way along with Gears of War when it comes out. But I will be in Rome, so it's shipping to me in Rome. We're all going to have our little Kingston Gears of War branded headsets. I think we need a deathmatch.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not great at deathmatch. I will say Gears of War, those games, the single player stuff has been really good. The story has been good for the most part. The deathmatch stuff, if you're really used to the fast moving kind of twitchy, you know, Call of Duty type stuff, it's a little more grounded. They've got it a little bit more vertical over the years, but you know, especially the first game, it was just you kind of crouched down low to the ground, and that was pretty much where you stayed. So I'm not great at it, but. Do that.
Well, I mean, if you play with us, I'll try to get Pope Francis on the controller.
Please.
I've heard that he can frag like nobody else.
I just want to hear him swear like a sailor. That would be the best part.
Yeah, well, Gears of War is pretty good, but the one that I was most impressed with at E3 and the one that I really, really want to play is Cuphead, because that looks fantastic. Yeah. And I know, Paul, that you love that game.
And, well, actually, I will say even Mary Jo is looking forward to
it. I was curious about that one, actually.
The kind of, you know, like 40s style animation thing.
It's Steamboat Willie.
Yeah. That's neat.
There were a few. There was the Ship of Thieves or Ship of Thieves or Sea of Thieves.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Yeah. There were a few at E3 that actually were kind of interesting.
3D Realms. No, it wasn't 3D Realms. Sorry.
Are we back to just naming off studios?
Yeah, I don't.
All right. Well, when we come back, it's time for tips and picks and to close out the show. But first, let's go ahead and thank another sponsor of this episode of Windows Weekly. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you need money? Well, of course you need money. Everyone needs money. Maybe it's to buy a new house. Maybe it's to start a business. And the way that you normally get that is by leveraging what you already own with a mortgage. Now, a mortgage is the most fun you will ever have. No, I'm just kidding. It is a horrible process. The idea of gathering together all your receipts, all your little financial transactions, so that you could bring them into a bank, lay them out on a desk, and try to prove to a dispassionate bank manager that you're a good investment, that you're worthy of a mortgage. That's probably the worst possible thing that you could do with a weekend. Well, folks, don't do that anymore because there's a new way, and that way is Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Now, Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. First of all, it's fast, it's powerful, and it's completely online. I mean, this is the way that it should be. Rocket Mortgage has taken all of the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. Do you hate searching through those stacks of old files and paperwork? Well, you don't have to. With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and your pay stubs at a touch of a button. It helps you get approval in minutes instead of days, weeks, and months. That gives you a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored for you. No longer do you have to fit into this cookie cutter template of what a mortgage will be. Rocket Mortgage looks at your finances and helps you find the mortgage that works for you. Now, even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or your tablet, so you get to work where you want to work. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. If you are looking at doing a mortgage and you're not using Rocket Mortgage, you're working too hard. Folks, if you need to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/windows. That's quickenloans.com/windows. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Windows Weekly. All right, I always get confused by the Q and A. Who's the Q and who does the A?
I don't even know if we need to do a Q&A today because we have so much in the picks.
Oh, we do? Oh, yeah. Actually, I love your picks. Let's. This one's an interesting one. I saw this and I was wondering where we were going to go with it, but let's just find out. De-Apple-fying your iPhone? I don't even know what that means.
Oh, well, let me explain. I'm a Microsoft guy, obviously, right? I've been writing about Microsoft technologies and products for 20-something years. I approach things from kind of a Microsoft standpoint, but I think it's fair to say that in the mobile world, things have gone in a slightly different direction. And so like Microsoft itself, you know, we kind of have to adapt. And, you know, before Microsoft shipped Windows Phone, I was an iPhone user because Windows Mobile was so terrible. I used Windows Phone for several years. Obviously, things have kind of fallen apart over the past couple of years. And so I've spent a lot of time looking at Android and iPhone. And I would say to people who are Microsoft people, you know, Microsoft fans or Microsoft users, customers, whatever, Android is probably the closest thing you're going to get to a Microsoft-type experience, but more important because the system can be, you know, adapted and customized so much. You can change the lock screen, the launcher screen. I mean, it basically everything about it. It affords you the opportunity to have a real Microsoft experience because Microsoft makes lock screens and launchers and, you know, and keyboards and all kinds of things for Android. So you can have a real Microsoft experience on Android. But people who use iPhones do so for a reason. There are good reasons to own an iPhone. You might get one from work. You might have to have one. And so I've been using an iPhone for years, really. In fact, I've owned almost every iPhone model that Apple has ever shipped. I only didn't purchase two of them, but I've always worked very hard to kind of keep the distance from some of the Apple products and services. I don't use things like Apple Music or iCloud or Siri or any of that kind of stuff. And so I wrote an article about this, but I've been doing a series of tips about using Android from kind of the perspective of a Microsoft guy. I've written a few articles like this for iPhone, but not nearly as many. And so recently I kind of summarized a bunch of thoughts around what it's like to use an iPhone from a Windows or Microsoft user perspective. And, you can't change the launcher screen. You can't, you know, there's no Microsoft lock screen that you can install. You're kind of stuck with some aspects of it. Because that's, you know, what Apple does. But actually, iOS has opened up. You can change the keyboard. You can use SwiftKey, which Microsoft owns, if you want to do that. And all of Microsoft's high-profile apps are on iPhone as well. And so the point of this is just that you don't have to give up your soul per se to use an iPhone.
I don't know. I think buying an iPhone, you kind of gave it up already, but just okay.
actually, so by the way, that's more fair than ever, because with this version of the iPhone, the availability was so limited that I had to get a gold version. And I can tell you, that was not a proud moment.
Rose gold or just plain gold?
No, I didn't
gold.
Go rose gold, but I did get plain gold.
Isn't that actually part of the price? You do give your credit card and a piece of your soul every time you buy an Apple product.
And a piece of
your
soul, yeah. Right?
That's how that works.
Literally 1 pound, yeah.
How much does the human soul weigh?
1 pound.
Is it 1 pound? 1 pound?
Yeah.
Well, good, because I know I can give away a couple of grams and still be good.
Yeah, mine's a little fatty, but it's good eating.
Actually, I just got all my blood work back, and I am surprisingly in good health. I did not expect that.
That's good.
Except for my triglycerides. I guess pork rinds are really bad for you.
I'm somewhat surprised by that. Do you eat them in, like, a cheese bath?
Or no, I bathe in them. Oh, it's, yes. Yeah. I sleep in a bed of pork rinds. That's, yes.
it's good for the skin.
It's for that fresh pork smell. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we've got de-Applifying your iPhone. We've got an app pick of the week. Who's got Firewatch?
I do. So I have a bunch of app picks, but the big one is, yes, Firewatch. So Firewatch is a game that shipped, I think, last year on PlayStation 4 and also on PC through Steam. I played through day one on Raphael's PlayStation just to kind of give it a shot. I really, really enjoyed this game. And so just today, literally, it shipped on Xbox One. So you can get it now on Microsoft's platform. And so it's the same exact game. It's a wonderful game. It's kind of a like interactive adventure, basically. And there's a mystery, and it's got beautiful graphics and you know, immersive sound and all that kind of stuff. But it's I mentioned that when I talked about this on the podcast a few weeks ago, I said I'm going to try to get my wife and daughter to play this. I think this is a game that is compelling to people, just people who don't play video games, in the same way that a mystery TV series or something is interesting to people. I think people could get into this. So it's a great, great story. It's a really neat game. And the Xbox One version has some unique stuff. There's an audio tour. And when you finish the game, you can actually free roam around the environment. You can see the whole world that they created for the game.
This looks a little like Myst. Looks like it's got that same sort of artistic...
Don't ever compare this to Myst again. No, it's a... okay. Well, I guess what I would say is, you know, Myst for the day seemed photorealistic, I guess. I'm sure we wouldn't look at it quite the same way today. This obviously has a bit of a, I don't want to say cartoon, but it's clearly graphics. Like, they don't attempt to fool you into thinking that this is, you know, real photograph quality graphics. But the graphics are beautiful. It's a beautiful game. You know, really, really well done. The whole presentation is great.
Wait, it's not a horror game, is it?
No. But this is a mystery. It's the type of thing where, you know, you show up at your new job out in the woods and you go investigate what's going on. And when you come back, someone has ransacked the tower that you live in. And the music kind of kicks in, like, dun, 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 dun. You know, you can tell it's like it's getting a little stressful, like, what's going on here. And so it's a mystery that you uncover.
As long as the audio Slender Man doesn't jump out.
Well, it sort of does.
Oh, really?
not exactly, but... Yeah. And then just a few other things I wanted to throw out from apps, because a bunch of stuff happened this week. I do an app race and mobile app pick of the week, Skype preview app. We already talked about this, but if you're on the Insider program, it's certainly worth looking at. I haven't gotten it to work, but I know people have. If you're interested in the SMS relay stuff, that is available if you have both Windows 10 and Windows 10 Mobile. Microsoft has also updated a bunch of its mobile apps on Android and iOS. And so on Android, Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, the kind of the core apps, have much simpler sharing capabilities now. And also, and collaboration features. And then OneDrive, it's funny. I read the description of the new OneDrive app on iOS, and I don't think graphically it looks any different. They're calling it a file-centric UI or whatever, but it looks the same to me. But there's a new Me tab in the UI that lets you access all of your account information and a bunch of other stuff that was just hidden away before. So that's kind of cool. And then the new Outlook.com, which, by the way, I still don't have. I think I'm on, what are we on now, day 457 or something. if you have it, and I know Mary Jo does. They've added integrated support for Google Drive and Facebook Photos, meaning that if you're sending out an email, hey, I just went on this great vacation, here are some photos, you can pull those photos in from other services now, including Google Drive and Facebook Photo. I'd love to test that feature, Microsoft, if you're listening.
They're calling it OneDrive for life.
Yeah. Yep.
Paul, you're going to be the last one, the very, very last one to get the new outlook.
Now that you've asked for it, that's how that works. Sorry, it's a rule. Yep.
I observed on Twitter the other day that hearing that other people have the new outlook.com is like when you're at war and you find out that the buddy you're in a foxhole with is going home. And you're happy for him in one way, but you're also like really upset with him, because he's leaving and you're not. You know what I mean? It's the same kind of weird mixed feeling.
So what Paul's telling us is if any of you get the new Outlook, he will
shoot you in the back.
Yes, exactly. Yep. He wants to know immediately. Yep.
This is good. This is good to know. Good information. Yep. Mary Jo Foley, your enterprise picks of the week.
Okay. So my enterprise pick is going to be what to think about and look for next week at the Ignite show that Microsoft's having in Atlanta. Paul and I are going to be there. A lot of other journalists will be there. But looking ahead, I'll tell you what I think we're going to hear a lot about. So it's very interesting. At Ignite this year, there is only one day of keynotes. The morning keynote starts at 9 a.m. on Monday, September 26th. It goes till 10:30. Microsoft's going to be webcasting that. And then there's an afternoon keynote, which is 4 to 5 on the same day. That's it for keynotes. So there's going to be a lot of recording of all the different sessions of Ignite, and it'll be up on Channel 9, Microsoft Channel 9. I think we're going to hear, this is kind of a no-brainer, a lot about Windows Server 2016 there, because that's where Microsoft's going to, quote, launch the product. It won't be available that week, which is next week, but right after it, I think, first, second week of October, you'll see it starting to be generally available. So expect to hear a lot of Windows Server 2016, all the new stuff that's happening with containers in Windows Server 2016, we'll hear a lot. We'll probably also hear a lot about Nano Server, which is a new role, very stripped down role in Windows Server 2016 next week. We're going to hear a lot about Azure Stack. Azure Stack is basically Azure that you can run in your own data center or that your cloud provider can run in their data center for you. I think maybe we'll hear about technical preview 2 of Azure Stack next week. It would be around the right time. And Microsoft said recently that Azure Stack won't actually be available until mid-2017, so it's running late. But I think they do want to get the technical preview out there. There's a lot of sessions about Azure Stack. I think there's going to be some meetups, and there'll be a big representation for Azure Stack. Also, we haven't said this word on Windows Weekly lately, data lakes. I know everyone wanted to hear it. So also, I think Hadoop. Next week. Exactly. You're going to hear everybody a lot about drink. Data lakes. Everyone drink. Data lake is the big data repository technology that Microsoft's had in preview since last September. I think maybe at Ignite, we're going to hear them talk about data lake technologies being generally available. So we'll hear a lot of big data talk, a lot of Hadoop talk, probably will be tied in with some of the Data Summit presentations that are happening simultaneously with Ignite in Atlanta next week. Probably more about Microsoft's data scientist degree program, which they gave a little sneak peek of at the Worldwide Partner Conference. I think the first class that graduated from that degree program is going to be announced or somehow represented at Ignite. That's my guess, because Microsoft said that that group of people would be graduating in September. So we're in September still. I think that could happen next week. And then there's a thing that I've talked about before on the show called Open Mind Studio, which I think is kind of like Visual Studio, except for machine learning. I would be very surprised if we don't hear about that next week too. So all of these things and more, I'm sure, probably a lot of Office content, Office 365, Office Graph, SharePoint, all your favorite Office topics will be there as well. And we've said this before, Paul and I are doing Windows Weekly Live next week with Padre from Ignite at our usual time, 2 p.m. on September 28th, 2 p.m. Eastern. And then we finally know about our meetup. Our meetup is going to be held on the 28th, right after the show. It's going to be 5 to 8 p.m. It's at a bar, craft beer bar called Argosy, A-R-G-O-S-Y, in Atlanta. And I guess it's the Argosy East version of Argosy. So if even if you aren't at Ignite and you don't have a badge, you can still come to our meetup, 5 to 8 p.m. We've tweeted out about it a couple times and we'll tweet more about it. So definitely if you're in Atlanta or near, you can come and join us there. And while I'm talking about events, I want to throw in one more. Paul and I also are going to be in Las Vegas the last week of October at a couple of shows that are held together called Dev Intersection and IT Intersection. We're going to be speaking there too, and probably we'll have a meetup there. If you want to know more about that, there's a lot of really good Microsoft speakers. Steven Guggenheimer is going to be there. Scott Hanselman. Who else? Brad Anderson. A lot of big Microsoft names, plus a lot of the MVPs and big well-known speakers in the community there. DevIntersection.com. You can find out more there. So that's my mega enterprise pick.
That is a lot of picks. Of course, you know, yeah, we've got Ignite coming up, so that's to be expected. And to close us out, we've got the codename pick of the week and the beer pick of the week, which I'm actually looking forward to because we're going to be doing a beer episode of Know How. I may not drink beer, but I do like the smell.
Okay, so should I do codename now? You
do
ready?
It.
Codename pick of the week is Project Bletchley. And yes, it is named after that Bletchley, if you know what I'm talking about here. The
Park.
One in Bletchley Park, right, in England. So this, what Project Bletchley is Microsoft's codename for Azure Blockchain as a Service middleware. So since last year, Microsoft's been trying to work out a way to make Azure Blockchain as a Service be something that people might use in various industries, not just for Bitcoin mining and all, but also in a lot of enterprises, especially banking and finance. Because what is blockchain? It's actually a distributed ledger technology. So that makes sense in a lot of different enterprise type applications. What they decided to do was to try to use Azure technologies to make it easier for people to build applications that could take advantage of blockchain as a service. So they came up with this idea of Project Bletchley. In July, they put out a white paper and said, this is how we think this might work. This week, they actually put out what they are calling version one of Project Bletchley. What it is a template. So version one is just a template, basically. But it's a pretty powerful template. It's a template that is made to help people figure out how to kind of onboard into Project Bletchley. I wrote a blog post about this. I have a whole bunch of links with different things about the cryptlet technology that's part of Project Bletchley, how that works, some architectural diagrams for people who like that stuff. And Microsoft has a walkthrough of how to use this template. So if you want to just start kicking the tires now and seeing what is this thing, Azure Blockchain as a Service, you can start doing that now through this template that is available through the Azure Resource Manager portal. That's the code name.
Woot. Fantastic. And of course, we got to do the beer pick of the week, right?
Yep. So this is a very interesting beer pick. Stone Brewing, San Diego area, makes a lot of excellent beers of all kinds. They have a very famous series of beers that they've done called the Vertical Epic series. So every year, like on February 2nd, the 2nd of February, which is 2002, they put out a beer that was called the Stone Vertical Epic Series 222. They did one in 333, 444. And these are huge collector's items. Like people pay hundreds of dollars to try to get these old, very rare beers from Stone so that they can have different tastes from the Vertical Epic Series. So Stone, being the smart brewers that they are, decided on their 20th anniversary to remake some of these famous beers that they've brewed over the years. And one of the first that they remade is the 222 Vertical Epic. So they call this the Stone 20th Anniversary Encore Series. This is 222. And 222, I've had it a couple of times. I've had the original, and I've also had this remake. It's really good. Paul would love this, I know. Strong Belgian Golden Ale. Like all the things you love in a Belgian beer. It's almost like a strong wit beer. It has some of that
orange.
It's pretty
much all the things I love, period.
It is, pretty much, right? I know. Orange flavoring, very effervescent, very, it's not light like a lot of wits because it's a strong Belgian, but around 7%. Really good. Really, really good. And the remake, I can tell you, is equally good. So if you see this Vertical Epic series called the Encore series, definitely give it a try. I know 888 is also available now, and I think there will be others coming out.
There you have it.
That's the pick.
All the news that's worth having if you're a Microsoft fan. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, thank you very much for making this an entertaining, enjoyable, and very informative 2 hours. Paul Thurrott, of course, again, behind Thurrott.com. Paul, what are you working on? What should people be heading over to Thurrott.com to find?
What am I working on?
Oh, I can't tell you that.
Can you hint?
No, I mean, I can't. Sorry.
We're
rolling out like a premium service on the site, and so I've been a little preoccupied with a bunch of that stuff lately. So it's coming soon. That's all I can say.
So just go to Thurrott.com and find everything there is to know about the man who writes the book. That would be a slogan. If I were making slogans, that would be the slogan I would come up for you.
Not quite as good as the man with no name, but yeah.
A woman who does have a name is Mary Jo Foley, of course, of the All About, I always say Android, but it really is Windows, All About Windows blog over at ZDNet. Mary Jo, you always are my source for Microsoft happenings in the enterprise. Anything interesting going on your side that you're particularly jazzed about?
I'm like really jazzed about Ignite next week, because I think there'll be some pretty cool enterprise announcements. And it's going to be great that we're right there on the ground with all the big guys like Mark Rusinovich and Snover and all the who's who. So I think we'll have some really good news stories next week.
Fantastic. Yeah. Again, thank you for making my job that much easier by being absolutely brilliant and entertaining hosts. Don't forget that we do Windows Weekly here on Twit TV every Wednesday at 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 1 o'clock No, 2 o'clock. 2 o'clock Eastern. I'm not good at this. Leo does all the time zones. All I know is come to live.twit.tv and you can watch. And as long as you're watching live, why not jump into the chat room at irc.twit.tv? It's a good way to talk to the host, talk to me, and just enjoy the experiment that is Twit TV. Also, don't forget that you can find us at our show page, twit.tv/ww, in case you want to download some back episodes, check the show notes, or maybe even subscribe. If you want to support the show, that really is the best way to do it. Of course, you can also find Windows Weekly wherever fine podcasts are aggregated. Till next time, I'm Father Robert Ballister in for Leo Laporte. We're going to be coming to you live from Microsoft Ignite next week. But until then, take your Windows Weekly.